approximately on time. Thus, Bin of History featuring the fall opening, featuring two by Arch Obler, or actually nine by Arch Obler and Lost Gene Shepherd. Coming your way right here, right now on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org.
Wonderful people overnight. I think Max Schneid is brilliant and Arpo Martin is brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. Tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
good morning. And today, in the dustbin of history, well, we're going to continue on with our look back at the works of Arch Obler. And this is partly inspired by a request, yet another request, from Robert Rodriguez, who wanted to hear some of the stories that are included in Arch Obler's stereo 1962 LP release called Drop Dead, An Exercise in Terror. We have the whole thing for you this morning. And we also have the next in a series of Arch Obler's plays, the 1964 Revival series, remakes of classic Lights Out stories from the early 1940s. Tonight, Visitor from Hades. And, of course, we have a lost episode of Gene Shepherd as well, from close enough to this day in history, April 22nd, 1975, about games and non-sports events. So that's our lineup. Why don't we begin with Drop Dead, featured in many a magazine, like Famous Monsters of Filmland, as an ad in the back. And this release was apparently first put out in mono in 1962. I suspect it might have been re-released around the time of this Arch Obler Plays series because, well, he talks about it in that series. So I'm not sure when exactly the stereo edition was released, but it consists of 8 stories, some of them adapted from 1940s radio shows, and I think in weeks to come, we may actually hear some of the originals of the stories that are truncated for the stereo LP. And lots of radio greats in the cast, of course, written, directed, and narrated by Arch Obler, but Barney Phillips, Bee Benaderet, Bill Phipps, Chet Stratton, Edgar Barrier, Forrest Lewis, Harold Perry, Jack Johnstone, Jack Crucian, Jerry Hausner, Junius Matthews, Larry Dapkin, Mercedes McCambridge, Olan Soule, Ralph Moody, Sam Edwards, and Virginia Gregg are all in various roles on this LP. So let's give a listen to Drop Dead, An Exercise in Horror by Arch Obler in glorious stereo hi-fi here in the dustbin of history on WBAI New York. And since I failed to mention it earlier, let me say now that I am your curator and janitor, Max Schmied. Drop Dead, why don't you?
This is Arch Obler. In a horrific time, in a horrible world, I have been asked to try and horrify you, all in fun, of course. A challenge in horror, so to speak. Now, I know that you're not a person who is easily frightened. Monsters, ghosts, the dead, who gets scared at that sort of thing anymore? You don't. Or do you? Do you ever think of the undead? The ghostly ones crowded under their gravestones, the restless dead, millions of them there under the ground. May we try something? Turn your lights out. Yes, all of them. Lights out, everybody. Now then, sit down in a chair and turn your back to the loudspeaker. Yes, turn your back. Now sit quietly, very quietly. The room very quiet. Now whatever I say, don't turn around. Remember that. Don't turn around. Do you hear that? Now, don't turn around. Something is coming up behind you. No, don't turn around. It's coming closer and closer and closer. It's something. Oh, no. Dead. It's been dead so very long. No, don't turn around. Closer and closer. Decay, the odor decayed. You almost smell it, can't you? Now, don't turn. It's putting out its hand toward your neck. Skeleton hands reaching for your neck. Touching your neck. No, you weren't scared, were you? All right, to continue on our challenge in horror, let me try you with the psychotype. You know the sort of thing, sick horror. We see it in the motion picture theaters. The man stabs the girl through the shower curtains and the blood runs down the shower and the money runs into the box office and everyone is sicker in our sick world. You actually want to try out with some of this psychotype of horror? All right, here is some of the sickest.
Oh, how nice of you to come visit me. I do not often have visitors here. We are so isolated here, you know. Oh, sit down, please. Do forgive me for being impolite. I'm just about to have my evening meal, and I'm very hungry. Oh, you look surprised. You do not see anything on the table? Well, wait until I get the box. Here it is. Yes, here it is. Here it is. It is in this box that my meal is waiting. It is how do you Americans say it? A package dinner? Now, if you will forgive me, I will begin. There we are. Oh, but why do you gasp? It's just the head of a young girl. A pretty young girl. This all? Again you are surprised. But it is my very special saw. I have to work for my meals. Cutting through the bone is not easy. Forgive me. I must begin. Oh, I know what you're thinking. You think I am psychotic. I'm not psychotic. I'm just hungry. I like to eat brains.
Permit me now to try you out with one of my own favorite type of horrors. This is a sort that after it starts, pretty soon you just can't stand it and you want it to stop, but it doesn't stop, and when it stops, you're sorry that it stopped. Its title, Taking Papa Home.
Will you quiet down? And don't pull at me. I'm driving. Really, Harold.
Really, Harold. Really, Harold. Really.
All right. I suppose you have it coming. You've waited for your pension a long time. So, this is your night to howl. Oh, really, Harold. All these years, I never realized you had it in you. I wish I could make a recording of this and play it for you tomorrow morning. You won't believe me when I tell you.
Home on the range.
Home is exactly where you're going, mister.
Mr. Meade is going to buy his wife a new car out of the first pension check.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new car,
mm-hmm.
Mr. Meade.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. One for each foot and a swimming pool to wash it in. With that company check, we'll be lucky to have steak once a month. It'll be good to be together again, Harold. No more getting up at 7:30 and coming home so late. It'll be wonderful.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah, wonderful. I do wish we could get a new car. How I hate to drive this one. My goodness, we're at the railroad crossing already. Miserable old gears. Oh, my goodness, on the track.
On the track, on the track, on the track.
Start, will you? Start. Start, start. Train. Can't be. Oh, no. Harold, wake up, Harold. There's a train.
I'm
I remember. and lose the starter motor. I can't get it in gear. I can't. Harold, we gotta get out.
Nothing.
Wake up. We gotta get out.
I'm gonna sleep.
No, there's a train. You gotta get out, Harold, for God's sake. Harold, please. I won't go without you. Harold, darling, please. Please get out of here, please. Harold, you gotta stay alive. Oh, you've worked so hard waiting for the day of this affair.
Let us turn to another delightful phase of horror, the supernormal. I call this little opus The Dark. It's the sort of horror that was most effective on radio after midnight to make you wish, as you pull the bed covers over your head that night, that the author had been strangled while very young. But he wasn't. So, try this on for size.
Turning.
The alarm said Pine Street, didn't it?
Oh, yes, of course. So why this siren? The only traffic out here is on horseback.
Yeah, you can say that again, Doc. It's from nothing to nowhere.
Okay, let's go.
Yeah, right with you, Doc. Right with you. Said somebody was hurt?
That's what the switchboard said.
Gee, what a dump. Don't seem to be a bell.
Oh, there must be. There's a light in there. Try the door.
Yeah, it's open.
Well, let's go.
All right.
Hello in there. Hello. This is another false alarm. Anybody here? I'm a doctor.
Hey, look. In the corner. This I gotta see.
Lady, I'm a doctor from General Hospital. Now, what's the matter?
She is screwy, all right, ain't she?
Frightened.
Come on, Doc. You want us to get her out of here? Or the straitjacket. Should I get the straitjacket? Come on, Doc, wait. Where are you going?
Can't get it open.
Huh? What's the matter? What do you want to go in there for?
Can't get this open.
Okay.
Whoever is hurt must be in there. Blasted door. Come on, we'll break it down.
But the woman.
Forget the woman. Come on, put your shoulder to it. Come on.
Yeah, all right. It's dark.
Yeah.
I can't see a thing.
Go on back in the other room and get that kerosene lamp.
Well, I
get it, I say.
Yeah, I get it. Here, Doc. The lamp.
Okay. Hold it high.
Yeah?
What? Oh, Mother in Heaven.
What? On the floor. What is it?
It's a man.
Oh, no. It can't be.
Yes, I tell you, yes, it's a man. A man. And he's been turned inside out.
Inside out?
Yes, see for yourself. It's a man. But the skin is the inside. The raw flesh is the outside. Organs hanging.
Yeah.
It's a miracle. A man turned inside out. They could turn a glove inside.
It's alive. It's alive.
I see it, I see.
Alive?
Yes.
Doc, it's trying to get up.
Oh, no.
Trying to get up, I tell you. Trying to move.
Sam, hold that light high.
Watch. Look at it rolling over. Trying to get up.
Stop that. Look,
trying to get up on its knees. Doc, make it stop. Kill it. Do something.
Sam,
man
stop.
Can't live inside.
Sam,
out
stop,
like that. I tell you.
Stop. Hysterical old woman, that's what you are. You stand there and shut up.
Listen to him. Listen to him. Let's get out of here, Doc, please.
Don't be a fool. We've got to find out, Sam. Why? What? Look, there's another door.
Yeah. Open.
The answer might be in there.
Doc, don't. We
got the lantern. Bring it.
Gee, Doc, why can't we just go?
Hold it high.
Doc, what?
Don't move. There's no floor in there.
I don't see nothing. Nothing but dark.
Well, look. The dark sort of spills over on the edges.
Huh?
Well, look, I tell you. It's a deeper dark than dark. Something moving in there.
Doc, close the door.
No, wait.
Then I'll close it.
Oh, you fool, open that door. I've got to see what... She's coming in here.
Come on, Doc. Let's get out of here.
No, Sam, I'm going to find out what this is all about. All my life, things have been what they've been. I'm going to know all about this.
Please, Doc, please, let's get out of here.
Woman, if you know anything, tell me. What was it we saw back of that door where the floor should have been? Do you know?
She's going to the door. She's going to open it.
Yes.
Oh, Doc, will you listen to me? Let's get out of here.
No, now wait. She's just standing there, looking into the dark.
Yeah. Doc? What's that coming up out of the hole in the floor?
The dark.
It's like black smoke. Listen to it. It's reaching up to her.
Yes.
What is it? Smoke? Black? What?
Crawling up around her. No.
Inside out. It turned her inside out. Inside.
Sam. Sam, get up. Sam, open your eyes. The shadows are crawling along the floor toward us. Come on, Sam. Come on. Sam, you're... Oh, you're too heavy. I can't lift you. Sam, you've got to hear me. The shadows, they're crawling toward me along the floor. I can't leave you. You saw what they did to her. Look at her. Inside out. A woman inside out. Oh, Sam. I'll drag you out of here. Oh, you're so heavy. They're coming faster and faster. Like long black fingers. Yeah, my legs. What? Go of me. Sam, I can't help you. They're holding me back. The black. It's covering you. Sam! Sam. No. No, you thing, whatever you are, get off me. Stop covering me. I've got to get out of here. I've got to tell them all about you. I've got to tell everyone there's something like you loose in the world. Got to warn everybody. Get off me. Cold. Slimy. How can shadows be slimy? So cold. Covering me over. My head. My face. Sickle. My face. My mouth. Sickle.
You're still there? Good. Well, permit me to try you with the humorous type of horror. Horror can't have humor? Listen to A Day at the Dentist.
Any more patients, nurse?
Yes, one just came in. He hasn't an appointment, but he says it's an emergency.
Oh, do I know him? What's his name?
His name is Fred Houseman.
Houseman? Fred? Are you sure?
Yes, do you know him?
No, oh no. Show him in. And Miss Case, you can go home now.
But doctor, it isn't time.
I said you could go home now.
Yes, doctor. The doctor will see you now.
Oh, thank you.
Come in, sir, come in. I'll see you in the morning, nurse. And when you go out, lock the outer door. Mr. Houseman will be my last patient.
Yes, doctor.
I said, come in, sir, come in.
Thank you, doctor, for seeing me without an appointment.
It's my pleasure. Oh, will you get in the chair?
Thank you. You know, I used to come here to Dr. Charles. I didn't know you'd taken over.
Mm-hmm. Are you all comfortable?
Yes, indeed.
Now, what seems to be the trouble?
Well, I have a toothache.
Oh, yes, we can fix that in a hurry. Nothing serious?
Say, are you sure it's painless, doctor? It's funny me saying that, but here I used to play football and wrestle, but there's one thing I sure can't stand is a little pain. You know, drilling and things like that.
Oh, no. No pain.
Well, the straps. Why are you strapping me in?
Don't be alarmed. In order to keep this painless, there must be absolutely no movement.
Oh.
There you are. Snug as a bug in a rug. That's a curious thing to call you, isn't it? You're no bug. You're the lover type, aren't you?
Why?
When I first heard your name, I wasn't sure, but when you came through the door, I...
What the hell is this?
Mary Elson.
Mary? What do you mean?
Surely you haven't forgotten Mary, lover boy. What you did to her was very special, wasn't it? Worth remembering. Worth talking about. Worth slobbering over.
Who the hell are you?
Her husband.
What? Let me out of here.
No, you won't break those straps. They've been waiting just for you. That's why I bought out Dr. Charles' practice. Because I knew that sooner or later you'd come back to him. The painless dentist. Now you're here. Now you're here.
What? The drill? What are you going to do?
Nothing important. Just going to drill a little hole to let out some of the lover boy.
Oh, no. What are you going to do? What? Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Please. Please. No. 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 No.
Yes, lover boy.
And now that you've stopped laughing, let's consider the great open spaces of our noble West. In other words, television-type horror.
Hey, give me a chaw, will you? That greaser's taking it hard, ain't he? So he got a wife and kids. So who told him to get a wife and kids? Hanging from a tree, he'll keep them rustlers off our range, won't he? So what do we want the sheriff for? That's a greaser, ain't it? And he's tied up on a horse, noose around a tree in his neck, ain't it? So if somebody was to shoot off a gun, accidental-like, that horse would take off, wouldn't he? And we could head for town and a drink, couldn't we? So I got a careless gun.
Oh.
a kicker, ain't he?
No short hairs rising? Then permit me to try you with the science fiction type. With all these Sputniks and satellites circling our Earth, and with all this competitive fission and fusion going on, science fiction horror is the very latest. And we are trying to bring you the very latest. Do you remember some time ago, in an Eastern scientific institution, they kept a piece of heart alive for weeks on end? Well, I got to thinking, what if that heart began to grow? And grow, and grow, and grow?
Hello? Hello, operator. Give me Mr. Regan, fast. Hello, Mr. Regan, this is Lewis. Listen, get me a rewrite, man. The thing's still growing. No, Chief, I tell you the truth. The corridor's choked with living, crawling flesh. No, I'm not drunk. I'm telling you the truth. That little piece of flesh has grown until now. It's jamming that building. All inside the space of an hour. You've got to believe me. It's the greatest news story of the generation, and here you argue with me. I tell you, it's the truth. You've got to believe
me. You must believe me. I tell you, the only hope is to burn the building to the ground at once.
Now, wait a minute, Doc. Wait a minute. Take it easy.
I tell you, burn it to the ground. Burn.
And I tell you, take it easy. I sent in a call.
Oh, don't you understand? For some reason, I cannot even imagine. This tissue is doubling in size every hour. Do you know what that means? In another hour, it will be twice the size it is now. And long before that, it will break open the building with the force of its pressure. And then it will be free in the street. Do you hear me? Free in the street. And then those tentacles of protoplasm stretching out to feed on anything they can reach. What's happening? The building! See the walls! Cracking! I warned you! I warned you!
Now it is too late. The heart is free.
Gentlemen, come to order, please. Gentlemen, please, quiet, please now. As mayor, no one realizes more than I do the necessity of immediate action in curbing this unspeakable, unbelievable emergency. Can I assure you
that I... Cut the speeches, Mac. That blasted thing is spreading like a forest fire. Call the governor. Get the National Guard out.
Wait, please. Here is Dr. Albert of the Research Institute. Let him speak. And step up here, doctor.
And do something.
Let's see what he says.
Gentlemen, it was in my institute this horror began. And if you give me a chance, perhaps I can stop it.
What is it, Doctor? Tell us first what that monster really is.
Yes. Yes, I will tell you. That great ever-growing mass of flesh, it is, or it was, a chicken heart.
Chicken heart? Are you crazy, man?
Chicken heart?
Crazy! Yes, chicken heart, I tell you. Chicken heart! Listen to me, you fools! Listen!
Somebody up there knows what he's talking about.
I tell you, that mass of flesh was a chicken heart, the tissue of which, for some reason, is undergoing constant, rapid, accelerating growth. With every passing hour, its growth is doubling. Do you know what that means? If it is now one block in size, within 30 hours, that cannibal flesh will have increased in size to one square block to the 30th power. In 30 hours, every inch of this whole city will be crushed under that moving flesh. Within 60 hours, it will have covered the entire state. Within 2 weeks, the entire United States. You ask for the National Guard. I say, call out the entire army. Blast this thing off the earth.
Ready, Chief? Pumpers are ready. All the hoses coupled up. We'll flood that thing with water from all angles.
All right, here's the signal.
Open them up! Full blast!
Chief, look out! That flash! It's reaching out!
Get back, everybody! Everybody back!
The fools, what good is water? I told them. The only hope is artillery. Bombs.
National Guardsmen, report to your armories. All National Guardsmen, report to your armories. General mobilization order.
Battery in position, sir.
Commence firing on the hour.
Yes, sir.
10, 5, 0. Commence firing!
Useless. It has grown too large, and it grows too quickly. The flesh is already engulfing the guns. They came too late.
You all right now, Dr. Alberts?
Yes. Yes, I'm all right, Mr. Lewis. I'm all right.
Well, I sure am glad I located you. I stalled as long as I could, another 10 minutes, and we couldn't have taken off. That blasted protoplasm, or whatever it is, was sucking at the wheels by the time we left the ground.
Yes, I saw.
5,000 feet. Well, we'll cruise around up here for a few minutes and then head west.
It will do no good.
You can't mean it. It must stop growing sometime. It must.
Look at it down there. The gray blankets of evil covering everything. See how the roads are black with men and women and their children running for their lives. See how the protoplasmic gray reaches out and engulfs them. See.
Stop it! Stop talking like that. We'll get away. The government, they'll send bombing planes, poison gas.
No hope. Listen to me, Lewis. You remember only a handful of days ago you asked me my prophecy of the end of the earth? You remember my answer? Oh, such a scholarly prophecy. Cessation of earth rotation. Mighty sounding astronomical theories. But now, this is reality, Lewis. The end has come for humanity. Not in the red of atomic fusion. Not in the glory of interstellar combustion. Not in the peace of white, cold silence. But with that creeping, grasping flesh below us.
It is a joke, hey, Lewis? A great joke. The joke of the cosmos. The end of mankind.
Why?
Because of a chicken's heart.
No! No, we won't die. I can't die. I'll find a safe landing somewhere. I'll find a place. The motor, it's cut out. We're in a spin. I can't get out of it.
I told you, doomed.
No, no.
All mankind, doomed.
No, we're falling right into it, into the heart.
Now it's time for the ultimate in horror. Yes, the ultimate, the top, the finale. The time is 20,000 years from tomorrow. A man is addressing a great throng of people. Listen to him.
Excuse me, please. I'm laughing. I know it isn't polite, but I can't help it. The funniest thing. Oh, wait till you hear it. Absolutely the funniest thing. Yes. Yes, I'll tell you. A hoax. He tried to play a hoax on me, telling me it was an authentic record of their times and expecting me to believe. Now, wait a moment. Wait a moment. I'll start from the beginning. No, really, I will. And then you'll laugh with me. I know you will. Well, it started like this. An old man comes to my study a little while ago, a package under his arm, and he tells me he's a student of the past. A past master of humbug, that's what he meant. Now, wait until you hear it. So he has this package under his arm, and he says to me breathlessly,
Kind sir, I brought you the most wonderful relic of the past the modern world has ever known.
Really, I said. What are you talking about, and who are you?
A lonely traveler, one who wanders in far-off places.
far-off places, that's what he told me. So I said, and is that what you're bringing me from one of those far-off places? He shakes his old head like a strutting rooster.
Yes, indeed. You are the greatest living scholar of the history of the old world, so it is fitting that I bring this to you.
Indeed. And what have you got, and where did you find it?
I was walking through the mountains beneath which the great city once stood.
Well? Well?
As you know, thousands of years ago, there was another civilization that reached great height.
I know, I know. Certainly you're not going to teach me history, my ancient friend.
Oh, no, no, indeed. I only meant to say, what I found high in the mountains, it is a written record of that civilization. The first written record ever to be found.
Well, for a moment, I couldn't breathe. I just looked at him. I said, have you gone out of your head with age, old man? Nothing is left of that ancient time. We believe that first the deadly radiation covered them when the dark planet swung close and then the molten rock thrust up. It's only our theory that men had a civilization here before us. For answer, he tore the paper off the package.
Look, look, these papers, reality, I tell you. High in the mountains, inside a piece of alabaster that must have protected it from the ravages of time, miraculously spewed out from the earth when the mountains rose up through the land. Look, sir, and read. A record of their times. A record of the ways of men 20,000 years before our civilization came into being.
Yes, he said that, and I took the book, took it in my hand and read. Now, listen to this. First, the crazy book said that... Oh, wait until you hear this. First, the book said that the men of that past civilization fought about the land. You don't understand what I mean? The world. They fought each other, maimed each other, bled each other over who owned what piece of the world. Did you ever hear such nonsense? They knew how large the world was, and they knew how many men were on it. But instead of sharing it in fairness, they fought each other. Yes, bloody wars for years and years. Do you ever hear such humbug history? And that isn't all. The book said they fought each other over race. Yes, race. Race. The book says the word means the difference between men. And then the book said that all men had the same origin, and yet... They killed each other over a difference they admitted did not even exist. Oh, what a fraud that book. And a man walked that world for a little while and said, for the glory of God, peace on earth. And he spoke truth, and men listened and said, we believe. And then went out to murder with bright music playing. Music, I tell you. And then a little man arose who said, for the glory of the state, war on earth. And he spoke lies, and men knew they were lies, and he knew they knew, but again they went out to murder with the music playing. And here's the climax. This preposterous book said that these crazy people who filled the earth in those days had machines with which to fly through the air. Yes, really, through the air. Imagine the wonder if it were true, speeding through the air like the birds, great glistening machines to carry men to new wonders, but... Guess what the fraud of a book said they did with them. Oh, you'll hold your sides when you hear this one. They loaded the machines with horrible tearing things and flew over the crowded places and dropped them. Yes, believe me, that's what this humbug history tried to make me believe was the truth. Men struggled for centuries. Men studied. They toiled. Rivers of heartache, at least the book said so, trying to make a healthier world for their children to live in. And then they threw poison clouds down from the sky and killed them off in the tens of thousands. Killed the children. Oh, isn't it all a joke?
Drop Dead by Arch Obler, with a huge radio cast produced originally in 1962 and re-released many times for your listening pleasure and sort of at the request of Robert Rodriguez. All right, well, we have been featuring Arch Obler's plays, a 1964 series of remakes of classic Arch Obler stories from Lights Out in the early 1940s. Today, Visitor from Hades. Now, of course, I didn't have a chance to preview this. Mr. Golden claims that Mercedes McCambridge is the star of it. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know who's in the cast, because they don't seem to give credits on many of these stories. If they did, I didn't have time to check it anyway. Just got to get the show in the can and on the air in the next 20 minutes or so. So here it is, Arch Obler's plays. And once again, we have a date discrepancy. It says here October 10th, 1964. The second episode of the series. Hang on while I look at something. Well, okay, Jerry confirms it, so it must be true. October 10th, 1964. He also provides the cast. Yes, Lorene Tuttle with Bill Phipps and Paula Winslow. Visitor from Hades. The second episode of Arch Obler's plays. Here in the Dustman of History, WBAI, New York.
And now, Lights Out. Arch Obler's plays. Stories of the unusual.
Hello, this is Arch Obler. Now, why does a playwright write a play? Well, take this one you're going to hear. Was it because I heard the neighbors in a knockdown, drag-out fight, or was it because I had a few words with my own little helpmate? Well, you'll never know except to listen and guess.
And now, Arch Obler's strange play, The Visitor from Hades.
Shut the window. A little quiet we'll have.
Want me to suffocate?
Suffocate? 42 years now I've lived in the Bronx. Do I look like I suffocate? Oh, come on, Dora. Be nice. We'll have quiet and we'll talk.
All right.
Yeah, better, better. So come, sit down, Dora. Come on, sit and we'll talk.
I don't know if I want to talk about it anymore.
Now, don't talk like something without a head. Why shouldn't you talk?
Good reason. I'm sick of it.
So, if you're sick inside, God forbid you see a doctor. If you're sick in the head, you talk to me. Who's better you should talk to than your own mother? Even if only by marriage.
He makes me sick.
News, you're telling me he makes you sick? Listen, darling. For 30 years, Sam's papa made me so sick, even to look at him, I used to close my eyes like you close from a piece of dirt flies in your eyes.
He's good-looking enough.
Washington. And not even Washington by the president. Washington, Washington, he has to run away to. A traveler in the family.
Not with me, he won't.
Not with himself either. Now, believe me, it's up to you, Dora.
Fighting all the time. If you knew how sick I was of it.
So bad at fighting and getting what you want, believe me. The door.
Yes, I heard.
Now, if it's Sam.
Sam, a 4:10? Yeah, him and a bank president.
Mister in a hurry, whoever it is.
Just the superintendent. And he fixed the light in the bathroom. All right.
Sam? Dora? Is it Sam?
Yes, Ma, it's Sam.
Now, Sam, don't start anything.
Well, what should he start? With his own mama he should start?
Ma, I thought I asked you to stay away from Dora when I'm not here.
Sam, I tell you, don't start that again.
Mama, answer me. Didn't I ask you to stay away?
Mamas who aren't welcome by their daughters in marriage I've heard of. But an own son
now,
wouldn't...
Now, don't get melodramatic, Ma. All I'm asking is that you don't see Dora when I'm not around. We had that understanding.
Sam, you stop.
Why should I stop?
All right. So both stop. I got a home. I'll go.
Oh, Ma, for Pete's sake, why can't you talk
No,
reasonable?
I don't want to talk. I don't want to stay. Oh, goodbye. I talk to you tomorrow, darling.
All right.
And don't forget that I told you. New York is good enough.
Of course, Mother. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
New York's good enough for what?
For you.
So she has been at it again. Dora, why won't you listen to me? She isn't right for you, my ma.
Maybe I haven't heard that one.
Then hear it again because it's true. All her life, everything she's done's been wrong. My pa, he was a swell guy, but she ruined him and his business. The way she's trying to ruin you and me.
Little boy's getting excited.
Listen, she ran him and his life. What he should do, not do. She breathed for him, and pretty soon he was glad to die. Believe me, glad to die.
Stop yelling at me. The neighbors hear you all right half as loud.
The devil with the neighbors. They don't have to stand 10 hours a day in that sweatshop. I do.
If you had what it takes, you wouldn't have to work for other people. You'd have a place for yourself.
I'd have a place for myself if you'd stop spending every nickel a week before I make it.
I got a right to live, have fun, ain't I? Can I help it? I married a dumb jerk, can't make a decent living.
Don't say those things, I warned you.
I said them yesterday, I'll say them now, I'll say them again. You're a jerk!
Dora, stop
it! Big, empty-headed jerk!
Stop it, I
tell
you!
Your mom's right, she's always right. The only way to treat a jerk like you is to spend every cent you make just as fast as you make it.
Dora, I'm telling you.
So you can keep on.
I'm telling you, Dora.
You're a jerk! A jerk! A jerk!
Stop it!
A jerk like your pa was.
Don't say that, my pa!
A jerk! You're mocking
me. Dora, stop it!
A fat-headed jerk who never reminds
me. All right, I'll stop you!
A jerk! They have him. Don't.
Dora.
Dora. I didn't mean to. Stop looking at me like that. I didn't know what I was. But my hands. Don't blame me. Blame yourself. My pa. The things you said, you wouldn't have said that if you knew him. He was good. His face was so thin and quiet, and when my ma'd start in on him for nothing. For nothing, I tell you. His eyes were like a dog. You kicked. That's why I wouldn't stand here saying those things. Not about my pa. What you say about me, all right. I'm used to them. First my mother used to. Now you. But not about him. You understand? Not about him. Well, don't stand there holding your neck looking at me. Say something.
I hate you.
All right. And I hate you so much.
I could kill you.
And I you.
Window. The dining room.
So who cares?
But a window broke, didn't you hear it?
Well, that'll break up the house.
Oh, stand. Oh, I'll go myself. Oh, kid. I told the superintendent to keep him off the street. If he thinks I'll pay for the glass, he's got nothing. Sam! Sam! Come here. Quick!
What's the matter? What's the matter with you? What?
Sam! Look!
What? Oh, no.
Sam.
Stop saying my name like that. Over and over for the last 5 minutes. Why do you do that?
Who? What?
I don't know. I don't.
Make it go away. Make it go away, Sam.
Yeah. Yeah. My flat. You. What do you want here? Who are you? Get out of here. Do you hear me? Get out of here.
I'm getting out of here. I'm getting out.
No, Dora, wait.
No, let go of me. I'm getting out of here.
Dora, stop. Can't you see he's getting up? Don't move.
Sam, where is he?
He's sitting down in front of the door.
If I could scream. But I'm afraid he... The police. Sam, call the police.
Yeah, the police. John, call. No, how can I?
Well, don't stand there. The telephone.
You'll stop.
Try. You've got to.
Right. All right, but walk alongside of me.
I feel so dizzy.
Just on a couple of steps.
His eyes.
Oh, the telephone.
Quick.
Operator.
Silence.
Oh, yes.
Quick.
How can I until the operator? Hello, operator.
Tell her, Sam.
Operator, the police. Get me the police, quick. Some came into our house. Well, something.
Sam, he's getting up again.
Police, operator. The police.
Sam, before... hang up.
The police.
Hang up, Sam. You don't like it. Sam.
No, are you crazy? Why did you just leave out of my hand?
I don't like it.
Look.
Oh, Sam, don't let him.
No. It's all right. Just stand quiet. Squad car will get here in a couple of minutes, Dora.
couple of minutes. Like a couple of years. Oh, Sam, listen. Why can't we break a window? Get the neighbors in. We won't be alone. They won't be scared. They'll get him. Please. Oh.
I can't. My throat.
They'll go away. Come in. Come in quick.
Did you say I could come in? All right, I'm in.
And the superintendent's kid.
Say, something's the matter.
Get out of here, quick.
Huh?
Don't stand there. Get out of here, quick.
Well, you said I could come in.
Go. Do as I tell you. Go quick before I...
Nora, wait.
What?
Let me talk to her. I got to.
Oh, gosh, what's the matter with you two? Look at me as if I was something in a zoo or something.
Arlene, tell me. Keep your voice down.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you come in here?
I knocked first. Sure I did, I knocked.
No. Why did you come up here?
Well, my pa was busy. He told me to come up and tell you. He called the plumbers, and they said they'd be over as soon as the agent okayed the job. So my pa said to tell you.
No, wait. That doesn't matter. What I want to know is...
Sam, he's watching her now.
Gee, Mr. Crook. Is she sick?
She's looking right at him.
Mr. Crook, what's the matter?
Can't you see?
No, I don't. Oh, gosh.
You do see.
Well, I'd say I do. Gee, will Pa be sore?
What are you talking about?
My Pa, will he be sore, that busted window?
Window!
He says it's bad enough, the extra work he's got to do around here without climbing around putting in windows that kids break.
Don't you see?
Sure I see. Gosh, you think I'm a dope or something? Well, I'll go down and tell my Pa. Oh, wait a minute.
Well?
How could the kids break a window up here in your flat? I mean, it's the fifth floor.
Oh, Sam, tell her. Tell her.
Say, take it easy, Mrs. Croft. You don't have to tell me. Say, you had a fight and broke the glass. Say, that happens in the best regulated families. Don't say I told you, but last week, you know, Mr. Bannerman, the druggist fell on floor, he threw a lamp at Mrs. Bannerman and he busted him.
Get out.
No, Sam, you can't.
Get out, I tell you. Go on out. Oh, right away.
Go on, you have to yell at me. Now you'll pay for that window, believe me. I'll tell my pa plenty.
Sam, she could have helped us. You threw her out. Why? She could have helped us.
No.
She could have. He let her in.
Stop it.
If you'd have let me tell her, she'd have called the neighbors. They'd have...
Stop it, I tell you. Stop it. He gets restless when you talk so loud.
Sam, why didn't you let her help
us? Dora, because listen. And then don't talk when the cops get up here. The reason she couldn't help us, they can't help us, is it? Don't you understand? He was looking at her all the time, and she was staring right where he's sitting, and yet she didn't see him.
Oh.
You do know what I'm thinking. Maybe no one can see him. But you and me.
Ladies and gentlemen, we leave the visitor from Hades for a short message.
Step right up and get your ticket here. Just 10 cents. $0.1, and you can see one of the greatest attractions on the Midway. It's bigger than diamonds, better than gold, more exciting than a trip to Mars. Why, it's almost as good as a box full of United States savings bonds. Hurry, right this way.
And now back to Arch Obler's story of The Visitor from Hades. A policeman has arrived. A very skeptical policeman.
Now, just a minute, Mr. Croc, or whatever your name is. Let's get this straight. You never put in a call?
Officer, I tell you, look around you.
Oh, are you starting that line again? Mrs. Croc, why don't you tell me what's up?
My wife has nothing to say.
I'm asking her, fella. So you had a little fight with him, huh, lady? Then he got a little rough. You picked up the telephone, you hollered for the police. Is that it, lady? All right. Now, there's something screwy going on up here. I don't know what it is, but I'm waiting for you to tell me.
Come on, Croc. It's in your face. Out with it.
You don't see anything?
I see plenty. You and your wife sitting here staring at nothing.
Nothing.
Listen, mister, please. Listen.
I'm listening.
Take out your gun. Shoot him. Kill him.
Huh? Who?
There, in back of you. Grant.
Dora, I beg you.
Hey, mister, what is she talking about?
In back of you. Look. Why don't you look?
Nobody in back of me, lady.
I told you, Dora.
You told her what, Croc? What is this?
I told you. Why don't you listen to me? There. Sitting there, staring at me. At you. Get him out of here.
So, that's it.
You see him. You do. Sammy sees him. He'll help us. He will. He will.
You will, Sergeant. You will.
Sure. Why not?
I told you, Sam.
Yeah, get a doctor over here from Bellevue in a couple of hours.
Bellevue?
Well, take it easy, lady. Nobody's going to hurt you.
Do you think that she's crazy?
Yeah, sure. And I might have guessed it. Yeah, I'll be back in a couple of hours.
No, I'm not crazy. Listen to me. He's sitting there watching me, watching Sam. I'm not crazy. I'm telling you it's true. It's true. Oh, why won't you listen? Why won't you listen?
Sam.
What?
What time is it?
Six, I think.
Getting so dark.
Maybe if we could turn on the lights, he'd be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, comes from the dark. He can't stand the light. I've got to get to the light switch. I've got to.
No, don't do it, Sam.
But I...
Sam, don't. No, if he touches you, but I gotta...
Floor lamp.
What?
Floor lamp behind us. If I backed up to it, grabbed the switch before...
Oh, careful, Sam.
Just keep looking at him.
Yes.
I got it.
Oh, Sam. The light. No. Still there.
Dora.
What?
Dora. Or is he laughing at us?
No, Sam.
Had your eyes shut. It must be almost six. Yeah, it's getting light. I haven't stayed up all night since I was a kid. Yeah, I was 12, wanted to see what dawn was like, so I stayed up.
Sam.
Huh?
Sam. I figured something out.
Figured?
Hours I've been thinking. Something about his face.
Well?
His mouth. It's just like yours.
Dora.
No, I'm all right, Sam. I told you. I've just been watching and thinking. Mouth. Just like yours.
Dora, don't.
Don't say anything. Just look. Well?
His eyes.
Huh?
I never noticed.
What?
His eyes. Like yours. When you're crazy mad. Look at his eyes. Dora, am I right?
I don't know. All I know is his mouth. When you choked me before. Your teeth.
Were they?
Yes.
Dora. The way the light shines. The left side of his face.
Huh?
You.
What?
You, when you scream at me. Your skin tight, like a skull. Dora, that side looks like you.
Sam.
I swear.
No, Sam. Like you.
What are you?
The other side of his face. All night I've been trying to figure. Sam, it is like you.
Part you? Me.
Yes.
No, it can't be. It isn't sane. It's crazy. It can't be. How can a thing...
I tell you, it isn't real. It isn't.
Sam, what's the use yelling it isn't real when it's sitting there?
You're not afraid at all?
No. I don't think I am.
Why?
That thing. Just the worst of you. And the worst of me.
Huh?
Oh, Sam, I'm so tired. Maybe I can't talk straight, but that thing. Part you when you wanted to kill me, and part me when I wanted you dead. Don't you see?
I think I do.
He's getting up.
Yes.
Looking at me. Sam, I'm getting a little afraid again. Oh, Sam, quickly, before anything happens. Tell me why you've hated me so much.
Well, I...
Tell me, quick.
Well, the last year, I worked so hard, it wasn't enough for you. Never enough. I couldn't figure out why, except you hated me. Why did you, Dora?
I didn't. I only... Yes, I did. Why shouldn't I say it? I've hated you ever since that night you laughed.
Laughed?
Remember? You ought to remember. A kid, you said. Not me. Not in this lousy world. Fill the house with anything you want, but no kids. Never.
So that was it.
That was it.
Why didn't you talk?
Talk? Don't you know yet? All my life, I really feel... I can't. I talk about them inside me. I cry. I hate.
Oh, Dora.
Sam.
Gone?
Yes.
How can it be gone?
Sam, go see.
Yes, I will.
Excuse me, Mr. Croc. Pardon, it's oily, but I saw the light under the floor there, and I heard you talking.
What is it, Superintendent?
Well, nothing, except I was wondering. Last night, my girl, you know, Arlene, she came downstairs with all kinds of crazy talk about you and the missus. You know how kids are. I was wondering. Well, somebody said cops came in the building last night about 9 or 10 o'clock, and I can't figure out where they went. Did they come in here? I mean, did anything happen here last night? Oh, Mrs. Croc, I didn't see you standing there. Well, did anything happen here last night?
Last night?
Yeah. Anything happen?
No, nothing.
Oh. Oh, well, then, excuse me.
No, wait. Wait, Superintendent.
Huh?
Wait. There is something.
Huh?
There's a couple of windows to be fixed.
Arch Obler again. First, my thanks to Lorene Tuttle and Bill Phipps, with Paula Winslow, Peggy Weber, Hal Perry, Jerry Hausner, and Byron Kane. Sound man, Bud Tollefson. Now a word about our next radio theater adventure. Have you ever thought about falling through the air, say 10,000 feet, without a parachute? Have you ever had one of those falling dreams where you... But more about that after a commercial word.
Some of us think Connecticut is a suburb of New York City, but it isn't really. It just seems that way because so many people working in the city commute daily between their jobs and the grassy country-like atmosphere of Stamford, Greenwich, or Larchmont. Those who don't commute, preferring to work where they live, may 9 to 5 it at the electric boat division of General Dynamics in New London, selling insurance in Hartford, or making clocks in Bristol. But regardless of where they work, both groups of people have a great deal in common. They don't share merely the nutmeg or constitution state, for the place of their residence is shared with others, such as P.T. Barnum, Harriet Beecher Stowe, Nathan Hale, Noah Webster. People in Connecticut today share the yearly excitement of the Yale-Harvard crew races, the beauty of the mountain laurel blossom in late spring, pride in their state's early Yankee peddlers, and more than anything, the true meaning of their state motto, "He who transplanted sustains."
We're talking about falling dreams because next week I've written you a play titled Special to Hollywood. It concerns an actress I once knew and an airplane I never want to know. Actress and airplane, you and I will, I hope, meet next broadcast time.
Arch Obler's Plays. Stories of the unusual. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Arch Obler's Plays on next week's program. That was the second episode of the Arch Obler remake series called Arch Obler's Plays, October 10th, 1964. Well, we turn our attention now to Gene Shepherd. Yes, and as ever, a lost episode for you. I don't know. I mean, I released it on cassette a number of decades ago. Why more people didn't buy it, digitize it, and put it online, I don't know, but they didn't. So here it is, as I'm digitizing all the reels of Ken Paletic programs that are not otherwise preserved. We bring you, from April 22nd, 1975, games, non-sport. Although some of them turn out to be sports. But it's Shepherd's second show on games this week. And, well, it's not available online or anywhere else. So here it is for the first time in a long time. Lost Gene Shepherd, Tuesday, April 22nd, 1975, in the dustbin of history, WBAI, New York.
April 22nd, 1975.
Job cuts are staggering. Evacuation of United States nationals from Saigon going on right around the clock. This is Lester Smith reporting. Next news as it happens, next scheduled news at 11 o'clock over WOR Radio 710, The Talk of New York.
test. Hey, attorney, what's the matter? No gain. Hello, one, two. There, we're back in business, almost. Not quite. Always check it before you walk out of here. Make sure the gain's right, okay? That's like a mechanic not trying out the aircraft engine after he works on it. You'll have to wind yourself up in the weeds, right? Yeah. You know, I'd like to... I don't know whether I should bring this up or not. It's quite controversial, but I have a friend who's been working on a ship model, which he got for Christmas in 1956, and he's been working on it ever since. And it's beginning to get him really mad. In fact, well, now, wait a minute. Now, don't put it down. He says he can't do anything about it. He said because this ship model was given to him by a relative, and every time they come over, they check on it to make sure he's got it and he's working on it. And he says it's like working on the damn pyramids. He's getting tired of it, and he doesn't like ships. Well, you can get yourself involved in some very bad scenes like that. For example, I have a friend when he was 19 years old, he was really into music. And so he spent all of his money on records. And he wound up with like 25,000 records. Now he can't stand music, but he doesn't know what to do with the records. So, I mean, you know, that's the way with life. Well, of course, the late James Thurber always had trouble with ex-wives. He collected, you know, had a few. In fact, you remember his famous cartoon? Yeah, it was a great cartoon. It shows this house, you know, just a Thurber interior there. And it had a bookcase. And there were some people coming in to visit the denizens of the house. The man and the woman were standing there greeting their friends at the door. And they were standing in the living room. And he says, that's the first Mrs. Culpepper. Up there on top of the bookcase. She was crouched up there looking down. would you please... before we get started here, I'd like to salute a new emerging art form, which is all emerging art forms are new, of course, essentially. But this is a new emerging art form, which the ABC television network is bringing. I can't say it's full flower. Let's say it's full weed. And that is the non-sport sport. Has become big on sports shows. Sports shows at ABC these days seem to consist of endless interviews of Howard Cosell with Muhammad Ali. It's called a sports show. But also they have another emerging category, though. Not only the Howard Cosell non-interview, but the which I think is more interesting, is the emergence of the sporting event, which has no sporting characteristics. Like, for example, who can jump off the highest pole? You saw that one, you know. So you didn't? Well, you should watch some of these things. So you would know what I'm talking about if once in a while you got your head out of the hood and started to watch something. But, you know, for 45 minutes we keep leaving the basketball game to see whether or not these guys are jumping off this pole. And always there's a voice saying in hushed tones, and in just a few moments, the 7,942-foot leap will be once again in the record books of fantastic. The wind is blowing. And it's the most cockamamie event I've ever seen since Schwartz and Flick and I instituted a sporting event, which got very, very popular for a while at the Morton Junior High School, which is long-distance spitting against the wind. It's really good. Some guys can do it. You know, the secret, for those of you who want to go into long-distance spitting, the secret, of course, is to be able to spit a very small, compact pellet of saliva. See, not the more, let's say, the more copious you are, the less chance you have of doing it. You wind up, you know, with the stuff blowing back in your face, and, oh, you know, it's a sickening. Bystanders getting splattered, and there's no control. But you agree, Jim, that you've seen people who can make that little zap, like a little BB goes whistling out. The best accurate long-distance spitter I ever saw was a guy who played for the Mets. And I used to watch him come up with great interest whenever he would bat. I would crouch up either very close to the TV set, or if I was at the ballpark, I would crank up the binoculars to watch him perform, because he was really great. He would stand in the batting circle and flip the bat up a couple of times and bang it down. He had this donut on the end, and he'd take a couple of cuts. And he was a pretty good hitter anyway, and he'd take a couple of cuts, and he'd move. And then as soon as he would get into the batter's box, He'd walk up to the batter's box, he'd kick the dirt a little bit, and then back out. He always had a tendency to step into the box, take a couple of movements of the hip, and then back out. He'd back down to the box, reach down, take some clay, you know, and rub it on his hands. And at that point, his head would go up. Just at that point, I would say, watch this, friends, watch this, great. At that point, he'd go, that little shot. Fantastic. Halfway to first base. He used to lay it right down the line. Zap, like that. See? Zap. And who was that? He was an outfielder. I'll give you a clue. So let's give, please, give me that. Yeah, that's right. A little salute here to great unappreciated moments in American sport. Please.
Good evening, sport fans, wherever you might be tonight. This is Stan Lomax, and tonight's View of Sports. We salute a new sport and a new American champion. Tonight's sports hero is brought to you by Rollo Cigars. Tonight we salute an American sports hero, and this hero, incidentally, is also a pioneer. The self-proclaimed world champion strawberry catcher is Ken Samples of Salem, Oregon. Mr. Samples, in magnificent form and beautifully controlled performances, catches strawberries and small cherry tomatoes in his mouth after they have been launched 200 to 300 feet or more by a specially built giant slingshot. Recently, at a well-attended performance in Oceanside, California, he set the world's record diving catch of a strawberry at 310 feet, 10 inches. A magnificent performance by an American champion, and we salute you. Tonight's sports hero is brought to you by Ropo Cigars, the cigar that makes you think. One puff on an El Ropo and you know that you've met your match. Listen to the Blue Network tomorrow for Stan Lomax and the sports hero of the week.
Thank you. That was very good. You like it, huh?
No, I mean, now, just think about it this for a minute. Now, here's a guy that catches strawberries launched from a specially made giant strawberry, obviously, a strawberry launcher in the form of a slingshot. Now, that in itself is pretty interesting. I don't know whether you've ever tried to shoot the strawberries out of a slingshot. I'd like to see that done. But now, that's a perfect subject for the wide, wide world of sports on ABC. Go and pick that one up. Like, for example, they have a cow flop throwing contest in Oklahoma every year. Who can throw a cow flop the furthest? And, they, of course, accuracy is part of it, too. They have a big circle. You know, you got to drop it right in there. You know, it's like parachute jumping. And they say, though, that can be very exciting to watch. And especially if you get close right down there and, you know, to get the box seats, you'll have to wind up with a cow flop in the ear. But, well, that's the way with all sports. You'll have to wind up with a foul ball in your ear if you go to Shea. So, you know, you got to take it. There's a little danger in being a spectator. But this is a sport that I'd like to see. And tonight, I think the I'm going to give it, since it's spring, you know, and spring is a time of unease. It is. It's on the one hand, it's a time of exaltation, which incidentally produces unease in many people. Do you agree? Oh yes. At any time of great change, and the seasonal change is a great change, because we're part of the animal kingdom. Incidentally, speaking of the animal, no, we're going to save that for tomorrow. You've got to listen tomorrow. No. Tomorrow we're going to deal with man as an animal, as opposed to man as man, per se. That is a difference. But, we're actually affected by all these things. You know, the spring comes, the winter comes, the rains come, the fall comes, the barometer changes. Do you know that a book has recently been published by a major world geologist, meteorologist, where he predicts, and
You know, this is give you something else to worry about once in a while outside of all the usual. Are you getting a little bit bored by the news again? I can't. It's so boring. I watched three newscasts the other night just to see, you know, with a watch there to see what happened. And out of three half-hour television newscasts, each one of them devoted anywhere from 20 to 26 minutes on Vietnam. Nothing else happening in the world. Oh, wow. Well, I guess you know, it's the way it is. That's called the herd instinct. If one newscast came on, never mentioned it at all, except down at the end, he'd be so far out of the herd that he'd liable to, you know, big problems. So the herd instinct is also electronic as well as philosophical and physical. You've got to get in with the herd. And if you're not in with the herd, you're very suspicious. Not only to yourself, you suspect yourself, you know, being sick. On the one hand, you can disdain the herd. On the other hand, you want to get invited. So it's a real problem. But I was just thinking about this spring thing. See, the sun comes out, and the breezes blow, and the robins walk around, and you know, doing what robins do, and. Yeah, all that stuff. Possums are walking around now, and guys are out there with their Sears Roebuck fishing equipment, flailing away at the woods and the trees and the birds, everything except the stream. I saw one guy trying to climb a tree the other day in Jersey. It was fantastic. He had a Royal Coachman fly. How he got it up that high, I don't know. It was about 300 feet up in a tree. And there he was with his fly rod hanging, dangling. And he was up there trying to get it. So the sport that we deal with here is not always necessarily a straight-line sport. If you watch television, you think everybody's playing tennis. That's it. You know, they're all playing tennis now. But there's a lot of guys that are out there doing the mumbly peg bit. And there, yes, do you ever see a good mumbly peg player? You know what the game is, don't you? With the knife, flicking like that. It's quite a great sport if you learn how to do it. You can lose a thumb, but that's one of the things that makes a sport interesting, is to have a little danger to it. Now, one of the big sports that grew suddenly in the Morton Junior High School, just like the sports, you see, I think sports grow out of the ground like weeds. And they have a brief moment of flurry interest, and then they disappear. Man is the only creature that we know of that invents abstract games by which he measures himself against other creatures. Now, other animals play, we think. Play by, you know, they just play. They'll swim and they'll do all kinds of things. But to invent an abstract thing... that has nothing whatsoever to do with basic human function or basic animal function is really interesting. It's an animal thing, you know, the idea of a game. Like, for example, I heard on one of the educational-type FM stations the other day, I was driving along, a guy was denouncing for a full half hour. You know, you always got the one thing about FM. There's always somebody denouncing something at it. That's just great. I mean, that's the denunciatory form of electronic communication is the FM, see. I'm right on, and this guy's spending a whole half hour denouncing the game of Monopoly. Well, he says, to this day of democracy, and he went on and on and on. See, obviously missing the point, though, which is basic to it, and that is that man has a basic desire to monopolize. It has nothing to do with what's good or bad. He has a basic desire. And, for example, have you noticed in all the various so-called workers' paradises, this is always a great big battle as to who's going to be the leader? Usually it winds up with gunfire, with guys up against walls, and other guys dangling from scaffolds, other guys being put into salt mines. And the desire to monopolize is far greater than the desire to, let's put it this way, democratize. This is WOR New York. And so games are natural options. I mean, you know, to beat somebody. So the solitary games that you play against yourself are always dull. Not dull, but they don't get the great crowds involved. You know, like tennis is exciting because you can beat somebody. You can actually beat them. You just, here, you know, wham, you know, you overhand smash, and the guy topples backward, you know, with his eye bulging out. And there's a certain amount of satisfaction in that. In fact, did you read Chris Evert's, or if you prefer Everett's, see, that's the mispronunciation, it's actually Evert's. Chris Evert's line about Billie Jean King, when she beat her the other day, she says, when you look across the net at Billie Jean King, she looks at you with total hate. That has nothing to do with the niceties of the game. Did you read her comment? Well, she did say that. So she says, I have to really play my game when I'm playing it. You see, hatred is part of the competitive spirit. And even though, you know, we make a great pretense of showmanship and gamesmanship and sportsmanship and all the rest of it, ultimately, to grind the other guy underfoot is what the game is about. Have you ever wondered why big businesses seem to always want to become bigger? Even though, you know, they're making all kinds of money and everything's going great, man, and you know, the executives, each one in his own, each executive above the rank of assistant vice president owns his own Caribbean island, and you know, the airplanes, they all own the whole bit. Have you ever wondered why their urge to continually become bigger and bigger and bigger? Well, it's the old urge to grind the other one underfoot. Grind him underfoot. And you see this in politics. You see, have you ever wondered why? Now, here you got Cambodia falling. You have Thailand falling. Well, it's the urge of the communists, in this case, to grind all other philosophies underfoot. And it's a genuine urge. And on the other hand, we have the same thing. You know, we want to grind the other philosophies. We want them to play our game. And so this is a... what makes man man? If you took away the competitive thing that's in all of us, and by the way, the guys that are the most competitive are the guys that sit on all-night talk shows, or they sit on the Tom Snyder show, and they talk about how evil competition is. And you see the glint coming out of their eyes of how they've just taken charge of this new organization that's going to stamp out evil. And we're going to devote our to Christ. They're going to compete against the competition people, and their philosophy is now going to prevail. And so all the way down the line, you find competition and the clash of humanity is an indigenous part of us, just like, and I have to say it, it's just like the salmon swimming upstream. He can't do anything about it. I imagine there are some salmon who stand in the forerun of the salmon push that's going upstream, we'll say. They're coming up the Columbia River, right? All these salmon are being hurled headlong up the river by instinct. And one salmon gets up and says, stop, stop! This is madness! Wait a minute! Do you realize they're going to catch you up there? There's nothing but death and destruction up there! You're going to go up there and you're going to die! Stop! Hold it! Hey, come on, forget it. You think that he's going to... No, what happens is the whole school of fish swims by him, and what does he do? He turns around and says, wait, wait, hold on a minute, you guys, and he swims right after him. So the urge to compete is indigenous to us. There's no way to get out and from around it. I think it's a basic instinct, and it has nothing to do with being able to think your way out of it any more than you can... you know, you can philosophize your way out of the sexual instinct, the procreation instinct. You can philosophize all you want, but it's there. So philosophy does not change a damn thing, nor does willpower. It winds up that's what you are. See, so the games just spring like flowers in the spring. So this is the time when it really happens. Like one of the great battles I once witnessed in school was on cleanup week. Now, do you have cleanup week in your school? You know, cleanup week in the spring, cleanup week. And cleanup week consisted, at this point in the Morton School, everybody was taken out of one day, you know, it was a nice, beautiful spring day just like this. Always we had cleanup week, usually in the end of April, beginning of May. And all the kids go out of school, and the teachers are in charge. And we're supposed to walk around and clean up the whole school grounds. We walk around, you know, we pick up tin cans and we pick up all kinds of stuff that's laying around and the weeds, and they pick up the weeds even, and they clean up. That's cleanup, right? Well, one time, the seventh grade was supposed to battle against the eighth grade to see who could clean up the most. Well, I don't have to tell you what happened. Guys were rolling around in the weeds, fist fighting over a sardine can. I'm standing. This was also at the time when they celebrated Arbor Day. When does Arbor Day come? Well, you know, there's such a thing as Arbor Day. When you plant a tree, you go out there and you plant this tree. And everybody stands around and somebody sings Joyce Kilmer's Trees. I don't touch It's all part of the competitive urge that is in spring. Spring is the cruelest time. Yes, indeed. Yes. First of all, it's the procreative tonight. And a lot of guys are left behind in the procreative rush. They call this the sexual dominance, which is part of the animal kingdom. Sure, if you ever see a crowd of buffalo, there's always one or two buffaloes that run the show. Oh, and those other male buffaloes that try to, you know, make the scene. Wow. Oh, wow. There's a lot of yelling. Well, one time we had this great game that suddenly popped up. I cannot explain to you because the rules were extremely complicated. As the rules, as you start a game, this is what makes man more interesting than dogs, is that his rules very quickly become highly convoluted. Whereas a dog's rules are never convoluted. If two dogs are running after a ball, the only thing they can think of is to grab the ball and run back. But it would never occur to one dog to say to the other, okay, now wait a minute, let's stop here a minute. Now wait a minute. If you go outside of that line there where that fire plug is, and if you go to the other side over there, it's all over. I get the ball, right? That's called out of bounds. Or if I do it, then you get it, right? It's out of bounds. No way. Throw the ball, and they go after the ball. And they come running back with their eyeballs bugging. And so we are the only creature that complicates everything he does with regulations, rules, fashions, all kinds of subtleties. If a person were to come from Mars, he would be totally confused as to what the hell tennis is about. It's all highly complicated, all kinds of little subtle rules. And so you see this even among kids. Now, I remember a specific game. Do you remember a game that you played when you were in school that was an unofficial game? See, games come often out of the terrain that's available. In other words, tennis, in a very real sense, is a game of affluence. Jim says no. Well, Jim hasn't thought about it then. It is a game of affluence because, for one thing, you need a court. Okay. Not only do you need a court, but that court has to be tended beautifully. You can't just say, well, let's go out and play tennis out on the street. It's never done. Sure, your kids will go out and bat a ball back and forth, but tennis requires a court. More than that, it requires an enclosed court, or you'd be spending all of your time chasing balls. So right there, it requires a certain, there's nothing more valuable in a crowded world than space. And I'm talking about private space. So the idea of having a piece of ground as large as a tennis court just for playing a game on is pretty affluent. And only in countries where there was great affluence did tennis grow. Among them, the 19th century, early 20th century England. Tennis was a game played by the landed gentry because they had one thing, land. That's why they called them the landed gentry. They could build this elegant tennis court. And they could get a servant to come and tend the tennis court. And before we go any further, speaking of affluence, we've got to start hitting the money button, please.
In the first 3 months of 1975, America's Big Three pioneered the rebate. Now, American kosher goes one step further, introducing the Rebite, a rebate you can sink your teeth into. 6 delicious ounces of sliced bologna free. That's 89 cents worth free with every 1-pound package of American kosher franks at the regular price. price. For the first time in American history, Frankfurter and bologna meet in the same package. What excitement! The Rebite, New York's greatest bologna free, with every one-pound package of delicious American kosher Franks with that special New York taste. The American kosher Rebite is here, but hurry, this offer ends May 4th. Get down to your food store now, take advantage of this great American kosher deal, and save an incredible 89 cents. In the struggle against inflation, American kosher munches on.
To the sun, our national flying meet. Taking a flight, I'll be doing it right. Our national flying meet.
Ta-da-da. Okay, National Airlines has just introduced a whole new way to fly. Not Jennifer. The No Frills Fare. You'll find no frills seats on nonstop flights to Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Monday through Thursday. You'll save 35% off the day coach fare. Anyway, there's a whole lot of copy here about it. It's you can save $61 one way. The fare is only $61 one way, which isn't bad at all. So see your travel agent for No Frills on National. I'll tell you all the rules and regulations, which are quite complicated. Let her get this little thing out of her craw. Well, yeah, well, see, now Jim just says, well, it used to be affluent. It is affluent. I'm talking about as a nation. We're the only country in the world, or one of the few countries in the world, that have still affluence in land, actual land area. And we can afford to set aside those nice chunks of beautifully landscaped ground just for hitting the ball back and forth on. In some parts of the world, land is so valuable because there's so many people that the idea of a giant, 20 in one town would be unthinkable. In places like Japan, where ground is measured by the quarter inch. So that's another kind of affluence. I have often wondered about games, you know, how they do it. Let's take another game that requires great areas, golf. Have you noticed that almost all the games that require great areas of land to play them on are games which originally were considered games of the, let's say, the moneyed? Golf is an example. And a few... And that's one of the reasons why it developed in places like Scotland, because let's face it, this is the country, Scotland and England, this is the country where a lord could have maybe 20 million acres. He owns the whole county. So it was no problem at all of taking, a half your county and making it into a place where you hit little balls in the holes. So golf is part of that, that kind of growth of affluence. Now, I think that that sports often directly reflect the actual environment. I'm talking about the ground and everything else that the country lives in. It's no coincidence that the great hockey players have been Canadian. They have more ice. I mean, it's just a fact. Not many hockey players come from Fort Lauderdale. Just no way. It reflects the fact that they have a winter that's about 10 months long, so you can go out and you skate from the time you're a little kid. You know, that's all you do. Have you ever noticed the dominance of Russians, we'll say, in figure skating? Same thing. They have long winters, and winter things like skating are indigenous to the long winter. On the other hand, we produce the great golfers. Well, because we have great tropical areas where a guy can play golf. He can play golf, 10, 11, 12, 15 months of the year. No problem. It's not easy to find a good golf course in January around Leningrad. Just no way. But so climate does affect, you know, what you do. And I remember a game, a specific game. I can't remember the rules. It just grew. All right? What was the game? Well, we had a lot of sand in the part of the country where I grew up, which is northern Indiana. It's this very sandy country. By the way, it was not country town either. It was very, very urban, but sandy. All right, so the
the school ground and the vacant lots were sandy. Made a difference. Sand. Now, if our vacant lots were concrete, we couldn't have played this game. It was sand. So what was the game? Well, it was a game designed to be played in a small lot. And now New York, of course, is where they played stickball. Well, because New York is a city of streets, narrow streets. Stickball is to be played on streets. You agree? And of course, the rules of stickball always involved if it bounces off that Pontiac down there, you're out. And if you hit it past the second manhole cover, that's a home run. And it was all based on the city. Well, our games were based on vacant lots, not big vast areas like say the country area, but vacant lots, but sandy vacant lots. So this game suddenly grew and it became a mania with us. We played this game for about 4 months and then was never heard of again. Now, what was the game? Okay, here's what the game was. It's a curious game. It involved a broomstick. Now, many kid games do involve broomsticks. I suspect that the broomstick has played a greater role in the development of American sport than any other single physical object. Would you agree or not agree with that? In other words, well, you know that that one of the great hitters in the National League claims that he grew up hitting pop bottle tops, bottle caps, with a broomstick. He did this for days on end, and he and his buddies would play a game involving pop bottle caps with a broomstick, and he did nothing but hit bottle caps till he was 15. He said he never hit a baseball till he was 15, only bottle caps. Well, of course, if you're hitting a bottle cap with a broomstick, that takes some hitting. First of all, a bottle cap is very, very, when it's thrown, is very, well, let's put it this way, unstable. You can put some fantastic sliders on a pop bottle cap. I mean, you throw a bottle cap and you can get a screwball that doesn't stop. And especially if you're hitting at it with a broomstick, which is no wider than the bottle cap. So to hit one of those babies, you got... And he says he got very good at that. Now, that's a guy named Ralph Garr, who was an outfielder and a 300-hitter plus for the Atlanta Braves. Now, what other games came from the broomstick? Well, stickball was a broomstick game, right? You didn't use a bat playing it. It's a stickball. Now, here was another broomstick game. We take a broomstick... And even to this day, to me, a broomstick is a valuable object to have because, you know, you play games with them. And before we get any further, we got to play the commercial game, please.
Moms and kids and grandmas too. Working girls give a cheer.
Look at that baby thing. Come together right here. It's a world you got to come with me.
Some grand buys this week. A little play on words there. Grade A turkey breasts. Oh, that's embarrassing. There's kids up. All white meat with rib. 4 to 6 pound average. 79 cents a pound. Grain fed pork loin pork chops. Center cut. $1.29 a pound. Yes, and how about the Grand Union frozen pot pies? 8 ounce package. 4 pies for $1. All good things from Grand Union.
And Grand Union's prices.
What you're listening to is the beating of one drum and the pounding of 18,000 human hearts. Now, what single live experience comes to mind wherein so many people are rendered into intense, fearful silence? Of course, Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus. And this year, besides stopping more hearts than ever before, we're getting something we've never gotten before. Standing ovations at almost every performance. Now, maybe it's because our production numbers are more imaginative than ever before. Maybe it's because we've added more sensational and dangerous acts than ever before. Maybe it's just because more and more grown-ups are realizing that instead of outgrowing our circus, they've really grown into it. After all, an adult really understands all the discipline and training and beauty and danger that goes into what's going on. But don't take our word for it. It's a lot more fun if you find out for yourself. Come to the greatest show on earth at the Garden, now through May 26th. You'll enjoy us even more now than when you were a kid.
Hello, Brooklyn and Long Island. This is George Seidman of Times Square Stores. When you visit a TSS department store, you'll like what you see. These stores are big, beautiful, and clean, well-lighted, with wide aisles and large assortments of fine-quality merchandise. On every visit to TSS, you'll usually save 10 to 30%. We aim to provide one-stop shopping at its best. And by the way, our washrooms are kept sparkling clean for your comfort. There's lots more I'd like you to know about TSS customer policies when we meet again. I'll be looking for you.
Well, let's see. Have you visited TSS's ladies department lately? They have a good one, according to this copy, for casual and dressy wear at prices you'll like. TSS department stores throughout Long Island and Brooklyn are open 9:30 a.m. to 10 o'clock at night. Okay, what else you got in there for me, Jim?
Right. Peter Lind Hayes and Mary Healy for Finnair.
Look, Mary, we've got to change our travel plans. Everyone's hearing about it.
Why, Peter? What are they hearing?
Finnair's radio commercials about the escorted tour we booked to Scandinavia. You know, the one that includes Finland. Well, Finnair's spoiling Scandinavia.
The only thing that Finnair's ever spoiled, dear, was us. Remember last year the Finnair tour we took? The great hotel?
Oh, yes,
the
sure.
Uncommon courtesies.
Of course, but they were not telling everybody about it on the radio. Mary, you know what happens when everybody finds out. It spoils it.
Well, look at it this way. Finnair's tours aren't for everybody.
Well, that's certainly true.
And it's also true that everybody who goes on a Finnair tour enjoys unusual attentive service only experienced travelers have found. For more than the usual Scandinavian holiday, ask for something right out of Finnair. It's the start of the finish.
Yeah, Finnair has three Scandinavian brochures, economy, standard, and first class. And you can see your travel agent to find out about this. This is Finnair. All right, thank you. Very good. Let's see. We have another one here. It's New York's biggest new nightclub in over a decade. It's Buddy's Place, and it's opening the 28th of April. It's nightclub Buddy Rich, has big band and all that sort of thing. Nipsey Russell, Carmen McRae will be hanging in there for the first 2 weeks, twice nightly, Monday through Friday, and it's Buddy's Place. Where is it? 133 West 33rd Street, on the lower level of Marty's Bum Steer 2. That's Buddy's Place, right? And let's see, what else we have here? How about dipping into this New York magazine thing? Let's see what they're doing this week. It's redecorating time, according to New York Magazine, and they have a whole issue of their annual home furnishings guide, New York Magazine. Very exciting, wow. New York 1975 Home Furnishing Guide in this week's issue of New York Magazine. Do not change a light bulb without it, says here. And let's see, where am I? Is that it? Oh, one more. All right, hit the button there, please.
In a tennis match, he can become a man possessed. He yells at himself, flaunts insults, and makes gestures at hecklers. Sometimes he will slow play by bouncing the ball 10 or 12 times before he serves. Last year, he even leaped into the stands after a boisterous fan. The he is James Scott Connors, world's number one tennis player. The writing is from Time Magazine's cover story this week on Jimmy the Great as he heads for Vegas to do battle with John Newcomb. It's the kind of thorough coverage you get only from Time. Every week in 22 departments, Time puts the whole world at your fingertips. Pick up a copy today.
Yeah, there you are. See, I didn't even hear that spot. And the spot itself admits to what we were talking about. That I think one of the reasons why a lot of people are getting uncomfortable with golf is that golf is a game where the only competitor is yourself. I mean, you fight yourself in that game. I'll tell you. And there's no way to get back at your opponent. Say, yeah, you're out there, and he belts this shot 290 yards down, right down the middle of the fairway, you know, and you step up there, and you belt your shot 110 yards down the fairway, off to the left in the weeds, and you can't say, all right, I'll get you in the next shot. No way, because by the next shot, he's already three holes ahead of you, and you're deep in the dandelions. But So tennis, you know, is a game for people who want to belt the other guy. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and it's also a game that, you know, it's a game that doesn't involve a lot of, I suppose you might say, real preparation. No, it doesn't really. That's why everybody can play tennis. He thinks not. Well, they're all doing it, friend. And I could suggest to you that tennis, and I'm not saying tennis isn't a hard game. Is that what you thought I said? No, I said that the tennis is a game that even 90-year-old people can play, which means then that it's not a game that takes a great deal out of you. But on the other hand, it's very difficult to find a good 90-year-old shortstop. Especially in hardball, when that guy's, you know, when you get that hard bouncing ground ball coming down at you. Because there's an element, I think one of the things, too, that people like about tennis is that there's really not much of an element of personal danger in it. You know, personal danger separates a lot of sheep from a lot of goats. And personal danger is ever present when you're standing at third. And especially when you're digging into the batter's box and there's a left-hander pitching, there's always that element. But then I didn't really get around to our great game. I'll tell you, the game was played with holes in the ground. Yeah, we dug four holes in the ground, and one hole was in a sense home base. Now it wasn't there was no running involved. Don't think of stick ball. A stick was placed. A piece of a broomstick, cut maybe 4 or 5 inches long, was placed across a slit hole, and then you flipped this thing up in the air with the broomstick. And as you flipped it up in the air, you flipped it towards one of the four holes, which were maybe 25, 30 feet away. And if a guy caught your broomstick, you were out. He caught you, and then he was up to bat. And the runs were scored by the number of sticks that you flipped right into the hole. It's a complicated game because it took a really good eye. Then we had one hole that was way out. It was way out past all the others. It was a bigger hole. It would be the equivalent of a home run. And if you flipped it out there, which had to go over all the outfielders and into that hole, that was like the grand slam and you won the game, no matter how many runs you were behind. It doesn't sound like a bad game, does it? Well, I'll tell you, though, you get a broomstick in the teeth and you begin to reassess the game. I mean, and I have had that happen. And this is WOR New York. Stay tuned for In Conversation.
Yet another lost episode of Gene Shepherd, brought to you exclusively here from the dustbin of history by yours truly, Max Schmid, from April 22nd, 1975, Games, Non-Sport. And more lost Gene Shepherd on next week's program. Next week, of course, more Arch Obler, perhaps even long-form versions of the original versions of the things we heard from the Drop Dead LP earlier tonight. And very likely the next, that we haven't heard yet, episodes of Arch Obler's plays from 1964. Tune in and see. Maybe more requests for Roberto. All right, this is Max Schmid, your curator and janitor, signing off from the Dustbin of History. Visit our Facebook page, The Dustbin of History, for illustrations, cast lists, all the details. And we'll see you next week, and Sunday night, of course, 8 p.m. for the Golden Age of Radio. Thanks for listening. Good night. Hey, not so fast. Coming up on 3 a.m., and I am supposed to air every broadcast of the Golden Age of Radio. Well, last